At 2 in the morning, I got out of bed, pulled on some socks, unlocked the flat door and, wrapped in my dressing gown, crept down the narrow staircase and into the shop. At the back of the shop there is a tiny room, not much bigger than a cupboard, that we use when we need to pack a book for the post. It contains a table and, on a shelf, sheets of brown paper, scissors and a ball of string. As well as these items, there is also a plain wooden cabinet that holds a dozen or so books. The contents of the cabinet rarely change. If you were to look into it today, you would see what I saw that night. A book without a cover resting on its side, and next to it an ugly tooled leather volume. A pair of books in Latin standing upright, an old Bible, 3 volumes of botany, 2 of history and a single tatty book of astronomy. A book in Japanese, another in Polish, and some poems in Old English. Why do we keep these books apart? Why are they not kept with their natural companions on our neatly labelled shelves? The cabinet is where we keep the esoteric, the valuable, the rare. These volumes are worth as much as the contents of the entire rest of the shop. More, even. The book that I was after, a small hardback, about 4 inches by 6, only 50 or so years old, was out of place next to all these antiquities. It had appeared a couple of months ago, placed there, I imagined, by my father's inadvertence, and one of these days I meant to ask him about it and shelve it somewhere. A charming volume and a first edition, but not the kind of thing that you would expect to find among the treasures. At jumble sales and village fetes, other volumes in the series sell for a few pence. The paper cover was cream and green. A regular motif of shapes like fish scales formed the background, and 2 rectangles were left plain, one for the line drawing of a mermaid, the other for the title and author's name. 13 Tales of Change and Desperation, by Vida Winter. I locked the cabinet, returned the key and the flashlight to their places, and climbed the stairs back to bed. I didn't intend to read, not as such. A few phrases were all I wanted. Something bold enough, strong enough, to still the words from the letter that kept going around in my head. Fight fire with fire, people say. A couple of sentences, a page maybe, and then I would be able to sleep. The prologue. Just a few words. But my eyes, brushing the first line, were snared. All children mythologize their birth. It is a universal trait. You want to know someone, heart, mind, and soul? Ask him to tell you about when he was born. What you get won't be the truth, it will be a story. And nothing is more telling than a story. It was like falling into water. Peasants and princes, bailiffs and baker's boys, merchants and mermaids. The figures were all immediately familiar. I had read these stories 100, 1,000 times before. They were stories everyone knew. But gradually, as I read, their familiarity fell away from them. They became strange. They became new. The stories were shot through with an unfamiliar mood. Everyone achieved their heart's desire. The king had his daughter restored to life by a stranger's kiss. The beast was divested of his fur and left naked as a man. The mermaid walked. But only when it was too late did they realize the price they must pay for escaping their destiny. Every happy ever after was tainted. Fate, at first so amenable, so reasonable, so open to negotiation, ends up by exacting a cruel revenge for happiness. The tales were brutal and sharp and heartbreaking. I loved them.